presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with Bootsy Collins, a bassist that needs no introduction. In our conversation, Bootsy tells us why he started on bass and his gear when he was starting out, provided by his brother Catfish, who eventually brought him in to play in his band, The Pacemakers. Bootsy describes how James Brown became aware of The Pacemakers and how he brought them on board, getting Bootsy a Fender Jazz Bass and two Ampeg SBTs. Bootsy takes us through when he decided to incorporate pedals into his sound and the pedals he used initially. Bootsy discusses when he began producing albums while working with George Clinton, and Bootsy tells us about his bass mentors, James Jamerson, Paul McCartney, and Larry Graham. Bootsy describes his original space bass and tells us about the current Star Bass made by Warwick, and he also gives us a quick tour of his most recent amp system from the last time he toured. Bootsy talks about ear protection after a recent surgery which has him sidelined and only working in the studio currently. And Bootsy discusses his friend Buckethead, whose album he recently produced and who he's worked with since the 90s. Bootsy takes us through his philanthropic productions and a few of the items you can purchase off his website, beer, wine, and star straps. And having the NFL pick Bootsy's tribute to Buckethead for their TV broadcasts. To find out more about Bootsy, you can go to his website, bootsycollins.com. That's BootsyCollins.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players. Because you know what? They do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my buddy, Bootsy.
Hey there, James. How are you?
I'm doing good, Bootsy. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Just working, trying to get these albums and stuff, projects done.
Yeah, I like your sweater or hoodie or
whatever. Oh, thanks, man. Yeah.
Is that some of your own merch that you make?
No, we got this one out in California.
Okay, very good. It's very cool.
It probably should be. Maybe I'll put it on the list.
Let me ask you this. Why did you pick bass?
Actually, I picked bass because my brother played guitar.
Okay.
And I wanted to play in the band with him.
Okay.
He was an older brother, 8 years older than I. And he was very cool, yeah. You know, and his friends was very cool. They had all the girlies, you know, and you know how that is. I mean, I'm a youngster. I'm like 9 years old, wanting to be like my 8 year old brother. You know, that's what actually started me to even think about, you know, well, it started me playing guitar. Uh-huh. And then once the opportunity came where he needed a bass player,
yeah,
that's when, I even thought about even considering playing bass.
And did your brother start the Pacemakers before you were start playing guitar or playing bass?
Not the Pacemakers. He was in Pace Setters and a couple of other bands.
Okay.
You know, but the Pacemakers, we came together and did that. It was just three of us.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were you playing for bass way back when?
Oh man, it was a Silvertone, which actually wasn't a bass. It was a guitar.
Oh wow.
And my brother gave me four strings, bass strings, and I put them on the guitar and turned it into a bass. That's the first bass I started with.
Right on.
You know, yeah.
And did the Pacemakers tour?
Pacemakers, did we tour? Yeah, yeah. We wasn't like, you know, every week touring, but we, I would say about every 2-3 weeks, you know, we on the road, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, didn't nobody know us. We had to go make a name.
Sure.
I mean, so make a name for ourselves, you know. Nobody knew us until we got with James Brown.
Sure.
That's what turned things around.
Yeah. And how did James find out about you?
The word of mouth. I mean, wasn't no internet.
Yeah.
You know, it's the word of mouth. And
so you guys must have been turning some heads.
Yeah, we was. We was very, very dominant. You know, and very serious about the music. We was goofballs, you know, jokers, practical jokers, but not about the music. You
sure,
know,
sure.
We always practice. So we did that even before we got with James Brown, and James heard about us from recording over King Records.
Okay,
We started recording with this A&R guy named Charles Sperling,
uh-huh.
who brought us into King Records.
Okay.
Once he brought us in there, we started recording for all these different artists. That's how James Brown heard about us.
Okay, right on.
Yeah, he wanted some of that funk.
Were you, so was it still the Silvertone at this point, or had you moved on to something else?
Yeah, it was a Silvertone until I got with James Brown.
Okay.
Once I got with James Brown, he told me he couldn't have that kind of bass on his stage. He said that bass wasn't happening, you know, and he was correct. But I love that bass.
Oh, yeah. Is that when you got the jazz bass?
Yeah, that's when I got the jazz bass, you know. Yeah. So that's when it really started.
Yeah. Did you buy the jazz bass in Cincinnati, or whereabouts did you pick that up?
No, we were on the road down south somewhere. I can't even remember exactly where. But he got it from me. It was the year 1971, I think it was.
Okay. All right. Yeah, and with the Silvertone, and then also with James Brown, what were you using for amps?
Well, with the Silvertone, I was using Customs, you know, those custom amps.
Sure,
that
the solid state, yeah.
Well, actually, Custom came next. I was using the Silvertone amp.
Okay.
It comes in a case.
Yeah.
And still has an amp in it.
Yeah.
So I started with that. And then as things started evolving, I started, you know, getting better stuff, you know. And so by the time I got with James Brown, we were using, first we started out with Vox stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then we graduated because he got an endorsement with Ampeg.
Okay.
And that's when I got real.
Yeah.
That's when the funk really got real.
What were you using as far as Ampeg? Was an SVT or
SVT,
available?
Yeah. SVT. I had two heads.
Wow.
And I had, because James asked me, what did I want?
Yeah.
And he should have knew not to ask me what I wanted, you know. But he asked me, and I told him two heads. He said, two heads? And I said, yeah, and two of the 8x10 cabinets.
Yeah.
So I had one on one side, one cab on one side, and one on the other.
Yeah.
And the two heads was right there so I could, you know, get to them.
Yeah.
And so this was unheard of for bass players in 1970.
Oh, sure. How loud was it on stage?
It was loud. It was loud. But I knew when to make it loud, and I knew when to break it down.
Sure.
We had dynamics. You know, James' whole thing was dynamics.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was glad to learn that kind of stuff, because if it wasn't for him, I'd been loud through the whole show.
You know? Do you remember what your brother was playing through?
Yeah, he was playing through Ampeg.
Yeah,
like the 212,
the V4s or something.
Yeah, the one with the 212s.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the 412s.
Yeah. Right on.
So yeah, and then he had the Vox guitar, the one with the wah wah, the distortion, you know, and the tuner.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was the. Actually, I still got that guitar.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
When did you start using pedals?
1973.
Okay.
I started really using them on stage. I started messing around in 1972,
uh-huh.
You know, with a pedal or two. But, you know, I really started expanding like in 1973.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, that's when I got my first pedal board. Uh-huh. Bass players didn't have no pedal boards. Uh-huh. I mean, you know. So yeah, that's when I kicked it off with the pedal board and started that with George Clinton them Funkadelic.
Yeah. And did you use pedals when you were with James?
No. He didn't hate Jimi Hendrix, but you know, it was like he didn't want it playing on his bus. And that's what we did every night after the show.
Do you remember what your original pedals were?
Yeah. It was the Mutron 3,
uh-huh.
And the Big Muff, and the Morley Fuzz Wah.
Okay.
Wow. Those were the three I started with.
Right on.
Yeah. And then actually that grew. And it just continued to grow until this day. You know, I swap in and swap out stuff now. You know, it's just gotten too big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you got with George Clinton, were you, what kind of bass were you playing then? Were you still playing the jazz?
No, I went to the P bass, the Fender P bass.
Okay.
Yeah, if you've seen those earlier pictures, I had a red fur on it.
Yeah.
You know, like my boots, I had some red fur boots, you know, come up to the knees. So, you know, we was funked out, man.
Yeah.
Kind of funked out. But, that P bass is actually in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Without the fur, though.
Right, right. I had it redone. Once I got with George, then I was at least making a couple hundred a week.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to, you know, do some things that I wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. When did you start working as a producer?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Let's see. It was before Roger. It was... was it Microwave? Microwave. Was Roger and Zap. What year was that? That was 1979, I believe it was. Okay. Because it came out in 1980, 1981. Then I did Godmama. That was like around 1981. So I would say the latter 70s going into the 80s.
Okay. And was it just out of necessity, or were people coming up to you and saying, hey, can you help us out here?
No, I started doing it because I felt like I could do it.
Yeah.
You know, I was putting tracks together, and anyway, uh-huh. I mean, you know, working with George, you know, the tracks would pretty much be there because I pretty much did them, laid them down. I knew where everything was at.
Yeah.
You know, Bernie would come in, add his sauce, you know, and Gary Scheider, Eddie Hazel, you know, they would come in and add their stuff. And, you know, George was always the last one to the party because he'd bring the party with him. The extra part, you know, the ones that get in your way while you're trying to do music.
Let me ask you this. So early on, who were your bass guys? Like, who were you listening to?
Oh, man. The top of the list was James Jamerson.
Okay.
That whole Motown thing, because that affected everybody, I think, in that era.
Uh-huh.
You know, Paul McCartney. I mean, I not only his bass playing, I just love the melodies, you know, that, you know, that the whole song start taking shape of.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then when Larry Graham busted on the scene, you know, he took everybody by storm with the slap bass.
Sure.
Yeah. So I learned from all of them.
Yeah. Did you ever get to meet either one of those guys?
Paul and Larry. I toured with Larry.
Okay.
You know, Jamerson, I tried to meet him, but they wouldn't let us in at Motown because we looked too crazy, you know. it's like hitchhiking, you know, and you got a bunch of crazies with you, and you know the people keep going, you know, because you're looking too crazy. Well, that's what Motown did to us, man. I said, I just want to see Jamerson, you know. And like, yeah, he want to see Jamerson. Get out of here. So, you know, he didn't know, but we get kicked out of the best of them, you know.
Yeah.
So it was all good. It was all good.
Well, how'd you come up with your custom bass?
Oh, man. I just wanted to have a bass shaped like a star.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was telling me it couldn't be made. And even if it could be made, it wouldn't sound right. You know, and I just didn't believe that.
Yeah.
You know, I was all up and down 48th Street, you know, trying to get somebody to make it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and nobody gave me any encouragement, you know, about getting it made. And so one day I felt like, you know, let me just walk around Detroit and, you know, see if anybody's interested. And plus, you know, I didn't have no big money. You know, so it was like, you know, kid, get out of here. I mean, you know. So I walked into this accordion shop place called Gus Zombie. And they had a few guitars and stuff, you know, hanging up. But their whole thing was accordions.
Okay.
And I don't even know why I was in there. I, yeah. I, I was someone said go in there and see what they can do. And I went in and I asked the guy, does he know anything about making a bass guitar? And he said no, but I got a young fella in the back that works on guitars and he makes guitars. I said, can I talk to him? You know, he said, sure. So he took me back there and I started talking to the cat, and you know, he wanted to know, did I have a picture, you know, of what I wanted? And I just happened to have one, of course.
Oh, right on.
You know, one I drew.
Yeah.
You know, and I gave it to him, and he said, man, you know, he thought it was such a challenge.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that's the reason he did it, yeah. You know, because it definitely wasn't about the money.
Yeah.
You know, because he told me give him a down payment of $150 and pay me the rest, you know, when he gets the bass finished. And so if you look on the Stretching Out album, the first album that I did,
uh-huh.
That's the bass unfinished.
Oh, wow. You know?
Yeah. They just colored it in so it looked like it was finished, you know. But I flew it out from Detroit to L.A. because they needed to get the cover shot,
sure,
of the album. And so I took it out there. And the deep thing about it is I didn't have a case.
Uh-huh.
And the pilots, this is going to blow your mind. The pilot said, that can ride up here with us.
Oh, wow.
I'm tripping again, man. But they were serious. They let it ride the whole way.
Right
up in the middle of both of them.
Yeah.
You know? And, I was particularly blown away.
Yeah. Did you tell them how you wanted the electronics set up?
Yeah. Yeah. I had it all written out, you know, because basically the first original one I had made was built around the Fender, the Jazz Fender.
Yeah.
Specs and the neck, you know, because I hated those thick necks, you know. The Jazz kind of started thin and then it will get bigger as you go down.
Exactly.
And so that's the way I had the space-based design, you know. And so that part was easy until I got out there and started playing and started to want more.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when I started, you know, looking for better electronics and began to get them.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
And people started wanting to work on the space base, you know.
Yeah.
Before they would, you know, no, you don't want that mess, you know. but it was fun, man. It was a journey.
Yeah. And who makes your signature bases now?
That would be Warwick.
Warwick.
From over in Germany. Yeah. You know, they did an incredible job of in 2012, putting this one together. We talked about it. I had checked out the electronics which they make, and man, it was just such a it was a beautiful time because I was there. I was actually there and not looking forward to going anywhere. I wanted to get this bass right.
Yeah,
I wanted it to be right. I wanted to light up, to flash. I wanted to do all this crazy stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And they actually pulled it off.
And did they sell them? I mean, can anybody buy them?
Well, not the original one that I had made. They can get... It's one for the public.
Okay.
You know, that's a star bass, and it just has one output.
Okay.
Mine has five, actually.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, you know, it goes through four different amp systems.
Oh, wow.
You know? So it's a different beast. Like I said, you know, it just took time and experimenting with sound.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course.
You know, and pedals and... You know, and so that was my other thing besides just playing the bass was finding the sound.
Oh, yeah.
That didn't sound like everybody else.
Yeah. And so your current rig, like if you were to go tour right now, what does your current rig look like?
It's got like the 5,000s, Crown amps.
Okay.
And QCA has got... two of those. What's the number on those? I think it's 4,000.
Okay.
And then it's got two 2,500 crown amps for the highs.
Okay.
You know, so we got the lows. You know, you got the mids,
yeah.
You the highs, and you got the ultra highs, and you got the straight.
And so what kind of cabinets are you using for these?
They were kind of homemade, except the highs and the ultra highs. Those are still the STs,
okay.
The STs, you know, but we put different speakers in them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the JBLs, instead of 810s, we got, it's still 810s, but it's the JBLs.
Wow.
With that big magnet on the back.
Yeah, that'll hit you in your gut.
Yeah.
and then you've got two cabinets, one on either side with 18s in them?
Well, actually, it's two cabinets with four 18s in it.
Damn.
You know, on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And those were what the 5,000s, they, you know, I got two of those.
Yeah.
One for each cabinet.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how loud are you on stage?
I'm pretty loud, you know.
Do you have
I'm loud enough to blow my own ear out.
Yeah. Do you have to wear your hearing protection?
I should have been wearing, you know, ear protection, but, you know, you're young, you're stupid, you're crazy, you know, and things happen, you know. I had to get an operation on my ear, and that's why I'm not on the tour now.
Okay.
But, you know, it's like you just play like that. I mean, you know, I wasn't even thinking about my ears.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they worked, you know, that's all that mattered. I mean... You know, you thought, you know.
Yeah. Will your ears be repaired? Will you be able to tour in the future?
Well, that's you know, they just got me on a time off thing.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. You know, I'm actually working in the studio now.
Yeah.
Because we don't have to do that loud, you know, that real loud thing. So I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, but I have to stay away from what that bass puts off. It's You know, and the other thing is, once you get used to that sound, it's like, you know, I can't really play without that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could, but, you know, it would be a whole learning, relearning process, I guess.
Sure.
You know, yeah, because you get used to that rumble, you know, it's hard to get away from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the foundation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Here's something completely different. When did you first hear about Buckethead?
Actually, 1990. He sent me a videotape.
Okay.
And you know, when I put it in the, you know, in the videotape machine, I was like, dang, you know, because I'm looking at the front of it, I'm like, this cat got a bucket on his head. And I said, this would be interesting, you know. So I put it in the videotape machine and started playing it. And he's in a room, you know, that looks like kind of like a jail cell.
Uh-huh.
And the door was shut, you know, the bed not made up. He's sitting in the middle of the bed, killing the guitar.
Yeah.
I mean, killing it, you know. And I'm like, I don't know who this cat is, but I got to meet him, and I gotta be, you know, I gotta play with him.
Yeah,
you know. And so I hit him back. He left his information and stuff. I hit him back, and next thing you know, 2 weeks later, he had flown out from California to Cincinnati, and we cut his first Buckethead Land record, you know. And it was out in 1991.
Right on.
Yeah,
and
it's funny you said that, because we are now working on his new record, which will be out in October.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. I love Buckethead.
He's incredible, man.
Not unlike yourself, he's a huge character.
Yes, he is.
And he backs it up with substance.
And you know what's really deep is he's really like that. You know? He's like Gonerville, man. For real. Yeah. Yeah.
You were working on that record. Are there other projects you have in the?
Yeah. Well, actually, we just put out the album of the year, number one Funketeer.
Yeah.
You know, and the next one will be the Buckethead new album. And then we're working on, it's a couple of projects we're working on that have singles. This Cancer project that we're doing, I'm doing the theme song on that. It's a woman's helping woman event that's coming up that I did the song for that. Uh-huh. And so it's those kind of things that's giving back to the community.
Sure.
That I'm really into now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm into musicians and getting different musicians together and seeing what we can come up with, you know. And so, you know, it's kind of like fun again.
Yeah.
Instead of just grinding all the time, it don't feel like grinding, you know. it's like it's some fun in there, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have your own Bootsy beer?
Yeah. Actually, we need to send you some.
Sure. I'll take it. And straps. You guys, are you having somebody make straps that you sell?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
On.
Got all got that. We got the wine, you know. Yeah, all of that, man. Patty, she's been on the case, Peppermint Patty, she's been on the case while I'm doing the music. She's you know, getting all the other stuff together and yeah, and actually in the NFL picked one of our songs to play in the
right
season.
On.
So you know, it's called Barbie T and Me.
Uh-huh.
And it's a tribute to Buckethead.
Right on.
And it's on Album of the Year. And we had no idea that the NFL would like it. And that was the one they picked.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That is great.
Which is leading up into the Buckethead, you know, album.
Yeah.
And, you know, how can you plan that? I mean, we couldn't plan that.
Yeah.
That's the funk, man.
Exactly.
Sneaks up on him.
And your home studio is in Cincinnati still?
In Cincinnati, Ohio.
All right.
Yep. Actually, Bucca was here a couple of weeks ago and coming back in another week.
Okay.
We finishing up. Everything done. Yeah. It's just a blessing, man, just to, you know, to be able to do it when you want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and do it without somebody telling you what to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a blessing. Yeah.
How much has Cincinnati changed in the time since you were a kid to now?
Oh man, I don't know how much of a change it's been, but I think I've probably changed a lot more. I mean, more so than, you know.
Yeah.
Because coming up, you ain't really home. I mean, you know, you're so out there.
Yeah.
You know, you don't pay too much attention to anything that's going on because you're so live.
Yeah.
You know, you got so many things you want to do. And, you know, so I wasn't seeing a lot of stuff, you know. And now I just sit back and observe. And it's a good feeling to be able to do that, you know. You know, to make it through that time period, you know, that's a heck of a thing. And I don't take it for granted.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, it's been an honor to speak with you.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, man. Thank you, man. You made my day. It's really been fun.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. It's an honor. It's truly an honor. And I hope I get the opportunity to meet you in person at some point.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure, you know, you're going to be in one of those Buckethead gigs. I'll be right there with you. All right?
Yeah, I will.
On the one, baby. Thank you much, man.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys. We'll
Mm-hmm.